There's two ways to be creative. You can sing and dance, or you can create environments where singers and dancers can flourish. I'm the second. I would be Roy Disney, but if you are Walt Disney, then when these two things come together, magic can happen. So you just got to do you.
I'm Jonathan Gandolf, and welcome to the Content Cocktail Hour, powered by The Juice. Our mission is to squeeze out the deepest secrets of B2B marketing professionals to help you push your brand to the forefront of the industry. Let's raise the glass. Welcome back to the Content Cocktail Hour. This is Jonathan Gandolf, founder and CEO of The Juice, and your host for today's episode. I am thrilled to be joined by Patrick Reynolds, CMO of Blueconic. We're going to have some fun. As we hit record today, it is Halloween afternoon. We're going to have some fun with this recording, but we're going to talk all things Black Friday, Cyber Monday for all of our B2C marketers out there and what that means and how to make the most of the opportunity that the season represents. I'll stop rambling there, though. And Patrick, I'm going to let you introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about your background and your role at Blueconic.
Cool. Nice to see you. Nice to be on The Juice.
Cheers.
Literally and figuratively in this case. So I am the CMO at Blueconic. Blueconic is a customer data operating system that allows predominantly marketers and business users and sort of medium to large enterprises to go gather first-party data, to harness that data to create individual or segmented experiences for their customer base more sort of expeditiously and frictionless, if you will, than many other platforms out there. So we're really a first-party data platform that allows you to deal with your customer base as individuals, as well as segments or one-to-many. So that's a little bit about Blueconic. Myself, I have been here for about 2.5 years. Before that, I did a couple years stint at MasterCard in their data and services division, a big global company, a big global division, great big team. And before that, I was with a loyalty and engagement platform called SessionM, which was acquired by MasterCard. And I've done all kinds of stuff you're not interested in before that.
We will find out. Before we find out on that topic, though, let's find out what you're enjoying drinking nowadays.
Well, so I am a person of ritual, you could say. So up until Labor Day, I typically like tequila. And then much like you put away the white pants, I put away the tequila in favor almost exclusively of bourbon. But I thought that would be a little aggressive for our podcast. So I got a local Buffalo, New York.
I love that. Well, cheers to that. I think this is the second episode we've been drinking on. Hopefully the second of many more to come. I like that we're leaning into the theme today. What's your favorite bourbon?
I like Weller a lot, like a 12-year-old Weller or 18-year-old Weller. If you can put your hands on one of those, they're always pretty tasty.
Oh, yeah. As somebody, I lived in Kentucky for 4 years. So anytime we get bourbon is the answer to that question. I like digging in a little bit because I'm well-stocked and always hunting for some more. So appreciate that. Well, cool. Let's jump in. Black Friday, Cyber Monday on the horizon. I assume a lot of marketers who care greatly about that, a lot of the prep work has been done or is being done. I know what you do at Blueconic obviously helps marketers achieve this, but how do you recommend marketers really make the most of the opportunity that this season represents, but also the, you know, it's an extremely stressful time for those marketers. What's the balance between, you know, it is burn the boats at this time of year and do everything you can versus also making sure you're doing the work the right way?
It's a tough time frame for everybody. And I think that context is really, really critical. So obviously, for a lot of people who are on a calendar fiscal, the fourth quarter is of massive, almost preeminent importance. And so there's a certain internal stress there to put the points on the board that you need to close your quarter and your year strong. Even if you're not on the calendar fiscal, it still tends to be a rather dramatic quarter if you're in any kind of a retail or consumer goods type space, and even sort of media spaces as well. So it's big, right? So what you have to do is really, really important. At the same time, it is incredibly stressful and confusing for your audience, your consumers. And I think you really have to lead with empathy in the fourth quarter and really understand that maybe the entire world isn't just sitting around waiting for you to kind of hawk your wares at them. And so one of the things that we're working with a lot of our customers to do is to really put that empathy in play here. I mean, basically, there are sort of two needs that most consumers have at this time of year. They either need ideas or inspiration, like, I know I need to buy things. I'm not really clear what. I just know, and they almost kind of short circuit. If you've ever hosted a large party at the holidays, you've probably felt that sensation of the kind of the white sheet of paper, like, where do I begin to get all the things, right? So there's that. Or they know kind of directionally what they need, but they don't know the fine details that allow them to put something in a cart and then pay for it and be done with it. So looking at the customer data, looking at what the customer has done, looking at what they are doing, allows you to make a pretty good guess as to what they should do next and whether they need inspiration or whether they need sort of guidance to purchase. And so that's really the name of the game for us. And you can't just sort of make a determination a priori. Like, before I even engage the customers, I have determined they're needing inspiration, because a lot of them are way past that. By the same token, you can't say, I think they're just looking to choose between these two things and I'll help them make that and expedite the checkout process, because some people are way up funnel from that. So you kind of have to really have that contextual awareness and that empathy, candidly, to look at the data and say, this is what I think this customer needs at this particular time.
It's going to sound like marketing 101 when I say it out loud, but I think we as marketers sometimes get so in the weeds on what we're doing. We forget that we're selling ideas and inspiration. And I think that's so subtle, but so powerful, that that is what we're selling. We're not selling a good or a service. We are actually selling an idea or an inspiration. And that's what the consumer needs to feel.
Yeah, that's really well put. And, you know, at the end of the day, if you really pull all the way, if you pull the camera back kind of as far as you can, what people are looking to do is be a hero at the holidays, right? They're looking to deliver a little bit of magic in the form of presents, experiences, whatever it is they're shopping for their friends and family and loved ones. And so allying with them, again, with a spirit of empathy as to, okay, you're trying to really make somebody feel special. Let's work with you on how to do that. First of all, do you have a ballpark idea of what they're looking for? And that's really, you know, how you do it. Because what you find is you can get products almost anywhere. In fact, there's almost no product you couldn't get if you went to Amazon. So if you just said, like, I need to buy a thing, it's there.
Yeah.
But if you don't quite know, or you don't know some of the subtleties, the nuances of it, then that's when you're in that shopping mode. And that's where delivering different kinds of experiences, whether it's like a lookbook or a product finder, or even a quiz or a survey to kind of help you hone in on the idea, can be really, really helpful. And of course, if somebody's ready to buy, you need to make that easy for them. But usually that comes last. Most people don't know precisely what they need until, you know, much later on in the process.
And most of the time, Amazon isn't going to sell you an idea or inspiration. It's a great utility, but it is not selling you on that idea or inspiration. So I think it's really powerful.
Yeah. You know, a lot of our customers have retail media networks, and there's a whole, you know, exposing people to different things through inspiration while they're shopping, but inspiring them about adjacent categories or nice add-ons or compliments to those purchases. That's all stuff that we help customers do as well.
That's awesome. So I want to pivot the conversation a little bit into data, but I'm going to do that maybe through your professional experience. You mentioned you work in data at MasterCard. I'd imagine in the space that you're in, maybe it's not as common, but you know, a lot of CMOs, they become CMOs, or just marketers in general, come from the brand and creative side of marketing. I have to imagine in your space, it's such an advantage to have this really rich data background and working in data and then being at a customer data operational system. Does that give you a unique lens to not only help your customers, but just kind of on the space that you're in?
Kind of, but I would maybe turn that around on its head a little bit. I think I would be a greatly diminished marketer had I not done formative years in brand, in creative, in really studying the customer as people without the benefit of these troves and petabytes of data that we have at our disposal now, kind of the old fashioned way. We used to call it observing people in life. And I think that, coupled with these huge troves of data that's really accessible and at your fingertips now, if you're instrumented correctly, that's the secret sauce. So if you just look at ones and zeros and data, that's cool. But if you don't have, it's that sort of the science. If you don't have the art to like know what you can do with that canvas or with those colors that data provide, then you're sort of clapping with one hand, as it were.
Yeah, I love that. So you have that really strong foundational brand and creative experience, and you've layered the power of data on top of that. And I think that certainly makes for a well-rounded CMO, I would say.
I'm here.
That's the hope, right? I love it. Well, okay. So digging on data, you said petabytes of data. Obviously, I don't know, maybe cliche to say there's more data available to anybody than ever before, to marketers than ever before. How does somebody learn to crawl before they can walk and walk before they can run with their own data, their first party data? And then, you know, marketers are sifting through second party, third party data, zero party data. It's all becoming, it feels like it's all coming downhill at us as marketers. And it's kind of, you have to catch a falling knife a little bit at times. What advice would you have to somebody who's either maybe just getting started with more sophisticated customer data programs, or is maybe feeling overwhelmed by the data that's even available to them right now?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely need a crawl, walk, run here, because if you try to take this on with the fire hose approach, it's quite unpleasant. So I think it was two, three years ago, Gartner came out with a report about I think they called it the data dilemma, which basically said that the more data marketers had, the less capable they felt they were at their jobs, because they were in effect inundated and just sort of drowning with a fire hose of data. And it actually was bogging them down and slowing them down. So the key, I believe, is you don't need all available data, because that's an absolutely astronomical amount of data. You need the most relevant data, right? So you need to think about what kind of experience, and this kind of goes back to the art and science, and you need to think about what kind of experience am I trying to design here? What kind of experience am I trying to architect for the customer? Is it, again, to show them the art of the possible? Okay, then I would need the following data sources that indicate this is their general sensibility. These are purchases maybe they've made historically. This is shopping or browsing that they've done, but they haven't completed a purchase, et cetera, right? So that kind of sets the stage. And then you can sort of execute from there. Whereas if you are just inundated with, you know, their address from three apartments ago and, you know, old credit card data and all these things that really are apropos of nothing in the current context, it gums up the works. So it's really getting the most relevant data. It's getting it in the time that you need it. So it's no good me designing a perfect experience after you've left my store, after you've left my website, after you've left my app. So it needs to be as near real time as possible. And so you have to sort of prepare for the experience before it happens, which is like customer journey.
Right. The relevancy and access and real time nature of the data is far more important than the amount of data.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you have a data warehouse, for example, it may have every bit of data that is conceivably collectible ethically and legally, et cetera, but if you have to write a ticket to IT to query this customer, that it's like the horse has left the barn at that point. By the way, this is never more true than now. Can I say that we're recording a silent Halloween?
Please, yeah.
Okay, so starting tomorrow, shit gets real.
Yeah.
There's no time for screw-ups. Yeah. Zero. So starting November 1, it's like, okay, let's pin our ears back and go. I don't have time to ask somebody else to do me a solid and pull some data for me. I need to have all of that at my fingertips.
What's the most creative use of data you've seen, either maybe from one of your customers or otherwise during this holiday season or past holiday seasons, but during this time of year?
I'm just constantly amazed at what people can do. And it really, again, it's that art and science. They're so creative in the experiences that they're able to create with data. Some of the interactive experiences I've seen for automotive, I think, are just amazing, where you're almost like making a little film and putting the customer in it to sort of see what the art of the possible would look like with you behind the wheel of a blank. And it's immersive and it's beautiful and it's personalized. Some of the things that people like L'Oreal in particular, some of the sort of the beauty products in the CPG space are absolutely incredible at, like, here's you and here's what you could do and here's how. So it's sort of a recipe book for how to do. I mean, it's just, it's incredible. And it's, It's creating experiences that people don't mind. They actually want, they welcome. You know, if you don't insult people, they're happy to spend some time with you. You can cast a vision for how they can improve, going back to empathy, how they can improve sort of their stock. They're all ears. We're all ears. But if you sort of treat me like a dumbass and talk down to me and sell cat food to dog lovers, then it's a brief relationship.
I've always said good marketing is a balance. It's walking up to the line of creepy versus cool. Especially when you're using somebody's data, right? You have to toe that line of, okay, this is really powerful and cool. If you go too far, it becomes creepy, right? How do you kind of navigate where that line is? Because it changes from consumer to consumer, right? And you're marketing to all of them.
You've just said it. So you have to allow people the permissions and the ability to understand how the permissions work and how to toggle them on and off to get the level of engagement and personalization that they want. So for example, I used to, when I was commuting, I would love that the second I would sort of get within a quarter mile of the office, I would get a push notification like, I presume you're going to order from Starbucks again. And do you want to order what you have done the preceding 4 days? Click here and it'll be ready for you by the time you get there. You go in, there's no payment exchange other than your digital wallet. To me, Starbucks can't know enough about me. I would sit down and tell the new CEO everything that, you know, how I grew up, my first love, my first dog, anything that they would want to know if they would give me a better experience, right? Now, there's some brands that don't frankly need to know anything about me. It's a very transactional relationship. You need to know which is which, and it's different by consumer.
It's funny. I always share a little bit of a similar perspective. I think being marketers, we're probably a little bit more liberal in data sharing than most, I would say. But I always say to like friends, family, it's like, we're going to get advertised to one way or the other. I'd rather the advertisement be a little bit more relevant than non-relevant, but I understand the privacy concerns others have as well. So yeah, it's all about knowing when is the right time to kind of walk up to that line as a brand. So that's a really great example.
As the old expression goes, you know, advertising is the cost of free. Unless you want to pay for every TV show you watch, then you are going to have some amount of advertising stroke marketing in your life. The question is, does it have to suck or does it not? And I think privacy and digitization and first-party data in particular has ushered in a new era of relative invisibility for marketing, where it doesn't feel quite so almost adversarial as it once did. And it's certainly less insulting than it has been historically, because it's like, listen, we know a few things about you. On the basis of that, we think you might want to look at, talk about these. Yeah? If we're warm, then you do it.
Love that. Okay, so I want to shift to your role at Blueconic just a little bit in the team you manage and just from the CMO perspective. This is the content cocktail hour. So I'd be really interested in hearing how you in your CMO seat think about content, where it kind of fits in your marketing strategy, and ultimately how you measure the success or lack thereof of your content strategy.
Yeah, I mean, content is an absolutely massive part of our strategy. We sort of think of it as on an XY axis. On the X axis, you have, if you think about a sort of traditional funnel thing, you have things that certain people want to know early on in a discovery process. We sell software that's reasonably, you know, it's not reasonably, it's quite complex and sophisticated. And it's not like, oh, I think I want to change my data operating system today and tomorrow it's all stood up, right? You have to do a fair amount of discovery and demos and all the things, right? So you have to create different kinds of content and content experiences from the initial down to the closing argument, as it were, right? So there's that. You have different personas that need to know different things, right? You have obviously the hands-on keyboard people need to know, like, how does this make my life better? I have jobs to do. How does what you're talking about make those jobs better, faster, cheaper, easier for me? Their boss needs to know things like, how privacy compliant is it? How secure is it? How does it play with other things in the marketing stack, i.e. how interoperable is it, et cetera, et cetera. Legal has a perspective. Obviously, finance has a perspective. So you need to create different kinds of content for all of these audiences. And the funny thing is you sort of have to have it preemptively ready so that when you pass a gate, you now deploy the next round of content to the next round of personas until you can get down to a closed one type situation.
That jobs to be done model kind of full circle goes back to the ideas and inspiration, right? Like, you're not necessarily writing about a feature set. You're writing about like the feeling of accomplishing that job that they are you know, being pressured to do and execute on at an extremely high level. So kind of full circle there. And I love that visual X and Y axis. I might borrow that from you.
Please do. Just get it right. Unlike I probably did.
We'll figure it out. Maybe last question, again, kind of from the CMO perspective. We're turning the page on the calendar year 2024 going into 2025. I'd just be curious, what's top of mind for CMO, or if you have any CMO colleagues, what are you excited about going into the new year? What's kind of making you anxious going into the new year?
There is a collective feeling among primarily US-based CMOs that I'm in communication with. Those could be client CMOs or fellow technology CMOs, that we're just really looking forward to turning the page on 2024 politically, economically, like in a whole bunch of different ways. I think people are feeling like, let's just pass this stone and get on to 2025 as quick as a bunny. So that is exciting for a lot of people. I would say on a tactical level, most people are now in a position where it's not if, but how AI. Robert Smith, who is the chairman and CEO of Vista, who is our strategic advisor, rabbi, owner, all the things. And he has had all the conversations with all the people on all the topics. He is truly a human Yoda type character who knows everything. Said something a couple of weeks ago at a meeting, which really landed with me in a way that other chat about AI has not, which is, you will not be replaced by AI. You will be replaced by somebody using AI. So we're almost past the, like, can I keep this at bay, to I can't keep this at bay, so how do I leverage it? And what we're finding at Blueconic is we are able to knock out some of the quote unquote stupid stuff, where we can spend more time on that mission critical, that left brain meets right brain, that more creative, that more instinctive stuff that a lot of us got into marketing to do. We're able to spend more time in those critical areas because things like sorting and organizing and tagging and doing a lot of the manual things that a lot of us have to do, especially when you're dealing with large data sets, we're able to do that much more efficiently through Gen AI than we could before, freeing up some time and capacity for us to do other things that we might enjoy more.
I totally agree. I think that perspective is so spot on. I always share, when Gen AI first came onto the scene broadly available, I think there's a lot of concern from marketers that it was going to replace the creative work. And I think very quickly we discovered, like, humans are much better at discerning AI created work versus human created work. And now it's actually flipped, exactly like you're saying. The gulf between AI created work and human created work is actually widening because people are having more time to draw on inspiration, to be creative, to do the strategic work and less of the busy work. So I appreciate that perspective. And it's similar to what I've heard and seen in market as well.
There's no sense keeping your head in the sand and pretending like it's not. The question is, like, how do you harness it? And by the way, one thing that I chat with a lot of people, particularly younger people, about is, one thing is, if it gets you home for supper, what's the problem?
Yeah.
Right. If you used to work till 8:15 every goddamn night because you just had a mountain of work, especially if you're kind of coming up the ranks, you know, if you're in your young 20s, you're just starting out, typically there's more work than people to do it. So you find yourself really grinding. If this can get you home for supper with your friends, family, loved ones, kids, dogs, cats, whatever, sounds pretty good to me.
That's a great perspective. I love that. All right. Well, the last question we always ask all of our guests. You might have already shared it. I'm not sure. I hope not. But what is an unpopular opinion you have as it pertains to marketing?
That it should be invisible. I have always had, I won't say disdain, but it's something quite akin to disdain for people who like to kind of cozy up to other marketers, or they market to marketers. Mm. And there's a cool factor and a currency that they take out of that that I just never understood. In my everyday life, I'm not hanging out with a lot of marketers. If that's your jam, then, you know, God bless. But it's really about people. It's like the end audience. The purpose of marketing is to make your brand famous, not yourself famous. And so I never quite got my head around the rock star CMO. I would rather be a roadie CMO.
I love that perspective. That's a breath of fresh air. We're in the marketing to marketer space, and I can tell you behind the scenes, ourselves and the team are sometimes talking about the cool kids club, that we feel like we're on the outside looking in, and So I appreciate that opinion. I'm curious though on that. I don't typically ask follow-up questions to these, but on that opinion specifically, how do you balance that with, you know, it's all the trend right now to be, you know, have your personal brand, be creator led, empower yourself and your team to create these personal brands. That feels like you're swimming upstream against that current trend that's happening in the market.
Yeah, and maybe I am like a salmon returning to its ancestral headwaters. I'm just trying to get to my happy place, but it comes down to authenticity. I would say the same thing about personal brands, if you will, which is an expression that I have a little bit of a heartburn about, but personal brands versus brands, right? Which is they're discovered, not made. So as long as it's authentic to you, have a ball. So if you are a show person, you know, do it. There's two ways to be creative. You can sing and dance, or you can create environments where singers and dancers can flourish. I'm the second. I would be Roy Disney, but if you are Walt Disney, then when these two things come together, magic can happen. So you just got to do you.
That's beautiful. We're going to end on that because I can't ask any follow-up questions to that. I love that perspective. But if people do want to learn more about Blueconic or Patrick, learn more from you, what's the best way to do it?
Well, you can come visit me at my house in Buffalo, New York, or you could go to blueconic.com and learn about all of us, including me there.
I love it. This time of season, I'm going to encourage folks to go to the website as opposed to Buffalo during winter, but maybe in the spring we'll come see you or when it's tequila season again.
Got a week to get here before the snow flies, probably.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Patrick, thank you so much for joining us. To all of our watchers and listeners today, thank you for joining a fresh episode of the Content Cocktail Hour. Until next time, cheers. Thank you for joining the Content Cocktail Hour powered by The Juice. If you want to see more episodes or more resources curated for your role, join us on app.thejuicehq.com. See you next time. Same time, same place. Cheers.